Last week, you heard the first part of our visit with Keith Arneson, a wonderful musician, banjo player, guitar player, and anything with strings on it. We talked a little bit about his new album, Namaste, and his time with the United States Navy Country Current Bluegrass Band. We're going to finish that conversation in the second hour today. A little bit more about Keith, more about the album, and just some things that he is now doing and exploring outside of the very friendly confines of the U.S. Navy, which he enjoyed and served his time, folks. He served the United States of America as a member of the Navy with actual military attachments, but he enjoyed playing music and did us all well, did us all proud. Keith Arneson, thanks so much for your time and service. And Keith has such a wonderful, gentle outlook on life and a giving spirit. And I think that really relates to the name of his new album, Namaste, which is what we talk about. But then we also branch out on things involving Keith's life and what he's going to do and what he's doing now that he's left the Navy. Coming out of this portion of our visit, then you will hear, because he does have a very kind and gentle sense of humor, a new song from Namaste. And this is another Keith original, Taco Bell's Canon. So he knows a little bit about classical music, and he knows where his fast food is. After that, Keith Arneson, just an amazing fellow. And you need to hear about his music, and you need to hear more about Keith and his life and his plans now that he's left the United States Navy band Country Current. I think you're going to enjoy it. Keith's just a really fine fellow. If you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Keith Arneson. Keith, we might have just traded messages about one of the tunes on here is Tony Pass. I met Tony, knew him fairly well, for the people who don't know, if you're not a banjo head like you are, right, much more than I am, Tony Pass. Right. Why did you write a tune? And it's not about a mountain pass; it's about a person.
No, it's about a person, and Tony was a great guy. He passed away from cancer a few years ago, but a good friend of mine here in Maryland, whom I've known since I was 19, named Dave Shankman. He owns a place called Turtle Hill.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, Turtle Hill.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, I know Dave.
Well, I've known Dave. Hmm?
I know David.
Yeah. Dave's still doing his thing down in La Plata, Maryland, right now. He's great. I mean, he's in great shape. He looks good. He's just a great guy, a great banjo player. And I love going down to his shop and playing banjos that I couldn't even think about affording, but they really are cool. But anyway, I met Tony through Dave, and Tony Pass made all the rims. There's a rim on a banjo for you non-banjos out there. There's a rim that goes underneath the tone ring, and the tone ring is where the sound comes from, underneath the head of a banjo. Well, he said nobody's ever done anything with the with the rim of a banjo. So, and Tony was a machinist by trade.
He made guns. He made guns and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. He was a champion shooter. But he got into making these rims, and they're beautiful by themselves. And Tony ended up giving me through Dave about three of them. In fact, I've got them in all my Stellings right now. And he gave me one that's in a gold-plated banjo, a gold-plated Stelling that I have that used to belong to Bill Emerson. I've got a rim in there that's got a wooden tone ring in it. So the rim and the tone ring are all one piece. And he gave me that right before he passed away. Yeah. But I'll tell you one real quick story about Tony. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday night or something like that, and I was still up, and I was fucking around on Facebook, and I was playing my instruments. Tony sent me a private message. He says, "Hey, man, are you up?" And I knew he was sick. I knew he was ailing, and I knew... He had elected to stop his chemotherapy treatments because it was making him, you know, sometimes the cure is worse than than the actual disease. So he had decided to just live his life the way and discontinue his treatments. Well, anyway, I knew he was sick, but he sent me a note and he said, "Are you up? Are you up for a phone call?" And I said, "Absolutely." So he called me up and we talked. It must have been until about 4 o'clock in the morning. And he says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm just playing and stuff like that." And he says, "Well, you know," he said, "I think I'm going to give myself a drink." And I said, "What are you drinking?" And he said, I'm having bourbon." And I said, "Well, you know, I got a bottle of bourbon around here somewhere." And we sat there, must have got drunk as monkeys or something, talked until 4 in the morning, you know, just about everything, about life and everything. And it was great. And it's a memory that I treasure. And I had rehearsal the next day. I don't feel too good, but that's one of the my last. That was the last time that I talked to Tony. And I actually got a note from his wife after he passed. You know, I called her off the beat. You know, if there's anything I can do for you, you know, just let me know, and I'm there. And of course, I mean, you know, he passed on. She said, you know, you were a friend of Tony, and I really appreciate that. But I do miss Tony. He was a great guy.
He had a great personality.
He barely played the banjo.
No, he didn't. But you know, and Keith, you remember this, and you can elucidate on this a little bit. Talked about much album, but when I met Tony before he started making those wooden rims that were to be made with and used without a tone ring. And, he had this method, by the way, for people listening. Again, you just got to bear through this. Tony made the rims a whole different way. He made them of block wood. Block rim. And he would squeeze, you know, he had to squeeze the glue out. They used less glue than, and we could go through the whole story with Tony, and he came up with this way of making rims that were, people, they were solid, they were great. And then he started making these things because I don't know if it was David Shankman might have had the first one that Tony put in a banjo, because I remember seeing him at the vendors area at IBMA, and I was playing
IBMA, right?
Yeah, I was playing David's banjo that Tony had made, and I used to always stop and talk to Tony because he was just a great guy. Uh-huh. And you would play it, and you think, well, wait a minute, this doesn't have a piece of metal in there. It's just this wooden tone. The rim that had a kind of a, and you looked at it from the top. If you had an arch top, he had an arch top rim. It looked like an arch top banjo, but there was no metal in it, and the weight all
there's
of a sudden,
no.
Yeah, a lot lighter and for guys like you.
Yeah, for guys like me with bad backs, it's sure it was a godsend. And I had a Necco banjo for a while that was very light also. Maybe it's interesting because I had gone to before I knew Tony. Had this, this way of making these rims with a rim and the tone ring type thing. I'd gone to our supply department at Navy Band, and I said, I need a new banjo. I need a lighter banjo. And they said, well, you're not due for one. And basically, instruments have they give it a lifetime or a life expectancy of how long they're going to last. And it's all based on horns, basically. And I don't know anything about horns, but apparently they tend to go bad over time, over about 5 years. They said, well, you're not due for a new banjo for about 3 years. And I said, what if I got a prescription for it? And the comptroller looked at me, and she said, if you can get a prescription for the banjo, I'll buy you the banjo. And I said, okay. So I went to Fort Meade Army Hospital, and there's a second lieutenant in there. I'll never forget this. And I said, he said, what can I do for you today, Chief? And I said, I've got a bad back, and I need a lighter instrument to do my job. And he said, well, what do you play? I said, I play the banjo. He said, you want me to write you a prescription for a banjo? I said, yes, you do it. And he laughed himself all over the place. He said, well, you'll have to help me with the wording, but I've never written a prescription for a banjo. And I guarantee you that Army doctor is out there somewhere right now.
Oh, man.
Still telling that story.
Oh,
and that's
wow.
How I got the Necco. And I played that for a while. It was a great banjo. And it's still at the band. Danny has it right now. Danny, the bass player.
And yeah, yeah.
Also the, anyway, he's playing banjo in the interim before Haley gets there. And Tony came up with this. Tony was just a great guy. He was just a really neat person.
He was the calmest. He was the calmest person, and great stories, and just wonderful.
He'd be just as calm if there was a hurricane.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Just like there was nothing going on. Yeah. Yeah. He lived in Arkansas, too. He's just a really great guy. His wife is really nice. But, Dave and I talk about him often. So,
Well, I'm glad you made a tune for him. And by the way, let me ask you this. Did you get you had a Stelling, did you not, that was, we'll say, GI government issue?
I did, yes.
Did you get to keep that? No, you don't.
What happens is when you come into the band, excuse me, you can order an instrument to your specifications, okay, as long as it's within reason, all right? I mean, you can't order, like, gold plating or anything like that. It's got to be a very functional instrument. So when I got to the band, there were two Stelling Red Foxes that had belonged to Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so I played those for about 2 years, and I finally said, I play a Staghorn, at home. That's my personal banjo. And I said, look, I've waited 2 years. I want to get my own Staghorn. So I had to sit down and write a point paper on why I should have a Staghorn. So I did, and I got one. That was the first one. And our drummer at the time broke it. Actually, he was putting his drums together. I had it sitting on a stand, and he was standing up, caught his shirt collar, and went flat down on the pavement and just broke the peg head off. So rather than fix the neck, the Navy bought me another Stellar. So I got another Staghorn. And then later, I played that for years. And then when Stelling came out with the Crusader, I wanted one of those. So I have one of those as well. So I actually had three or four Stellings, I think, while I was in my 24 years with the band. But when you leave, you turn that stuff back in because it's government property, just like a computer or a forklift or whatever. You can't take it with you. And the next banjoist who comes in the Navy can either, so Haley can play my stuff. I know she plays a Gibson right now, but she has a choice of taking my old banjos and using them or getting her own Gibson. And what they'll do with my banjos is the Navy has fleet bands all over the world. Okay, we got some in Japan, we got one in Italy, and all throughout the country. They're fleet bands, and then you have the DC band, and then you have a band at the Academy, too. So what they'll do is they'll go out to all the bands around the world, and if they need a banjo for whatever reason, they'll send it to that band, and if not, it'll be sent to for disposal. So that probably will not happen. Somebody will probably grab those banjos up, I would think.
So even though you're no longer in the Navy, Keith, your banjo can still see the world.
It can still see, yeah, that's true. Although, you know, when I was home, it's interesting. Whenever I played the White House or the Vice Presidents or something like that, I always took my own instrument. Because I always, you know, I always liked to work the workmanship that I had on my own. You always feel comfortable with your own instrument.
Oh, yeah.
And even though I played the Navy instruments, whenever I traveled, I always took a government instrument because it got broken, the Navy would fix it or give me a new one. And if you took your own instrument, you were responsible for that yourself. You know, it's like the Navy gives you instruments. If you don't play them, that's your own choice, but you take a chance. And until Colton Cases came out, I had banjos broken all over the time, you know, all over the place, all the time. And I had had different cases, but when Colton came out, I've been using those ever since the mid '90s, I think. And they're great for flying with. And so I even trust my own instruments in those. But I would always play my own instruments on Navy gigs around the area, you know, locally.
Yeah. Yeah, Keith, we've talked about maybe half a dozen of the songs on the new album, and I want to talk about a few more, but how do people find this thing? I know how I got it,
well,
but how do people get it?
Yeah, it's not out yet. I'm waiting on the graphics to be done right now. A friend of mine, Chris Warnock, and her husband, Archie, are good friends of mine. They live around the corner from us, and they're associated with the Delaware Ballad Bluegrass Labor Day Bluegrass Festival up in New Jersey, which is coming up this Labor Day. And I asked, she's also a fantastic photographer, among other things. She's also a PA, so if I get an acre of pain or something like that, and I'll tell her, it hurts when I do this, she'll say, don't do that. You know, that type of thing. But she's also a fantastic photographer, so she's doing the photography and the graphics. That's all I'm waiting on. And it's going to be reproduced probably as we speak, or it's getting close. And then people can either get it from me, or it will be available on iTunes through CD Baby.
Okay.
And there'll be several, and I'll put the message out on Facebook. But CD Baby, I think, will also have the disc if you want that, and or iTunes if you're a little bit more modern. You know, my mom and dad don't know what iTunes is, so or my mom says the Facebook. You know, I hear you were on the Facebook. I'm like, Mom, it's just Facebook.
No, the I'm looking forward to that. And by the way, I know your neighbors again by virtue of Facebook, and that's I know who exactly you're talking about. And they're always
very good. Rich and Archie are good friends.
Yeah,
very
they seem like real good people too.
You can throw a meatball from my house and almost at their house. They're pretty close.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to start a war. It seems like you guys eat together.
No, especially not a meatball war.
This album, Keith, is very. And I don't think this is because it's a reaction to you no longer being in the Navy band, I don't want to imply that. But this is a very peaceful, with banjo, it is, but it's a very peaceful album, am I right?
Well, you know, it is. I have recorded, you know, with Wayne over the years, I've recorded with him as a civilian and stuff like that. But this was really, aside from my Clawhammer, my solo album that came out like 15 years ago or something like that, this was a concept album. And it really has to do with me coming out of, I suffer from depression, which I'm not ashamed to say. And I like depression awareness and stuff like that. It's a medical condition, and it runs in my family. And it's something that can be fixed. A lot of people are afraid to seek help because they think there's just something wrong. Oh, snap out of it, that type of thing. But it's a chemical imbalance.
It is. It is. And Keith, I'm very glad that you mentioned that because I wanted to let you bring it up, but I know how you feel about it, but go on with that.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it took me a long time. It took me a lot of Navy doctors, and it took me a lot of time to be on the right medications and things like that. And right now I think they've found the right combination of meds that I'm on. And so it's a great feeling, and it's like me coming out of the light. You know, I mean, me coming into the light, coming out of the darkness. And if that can help anybody else, well, then that's great. You know, I think that's wonderful. But the point is I'm trying to make. Namaste means we are all gods.
Mm-hmm.
If we're together, you're together, we are all gods, and we all find our own peace. No matter what your beliefs are, what your religious beliefs or whatever it is, that doesn't matter to me. Political beliefs, whatever. You know, peace is the most, and music is one of the most peaceful things that
right.
I found
right.
for me. And if I can share that gift of peace, that is the concept of this album, that's really what I was trying to get across.
Well,
it's really laid back.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
a lot of beautiful guitar stuff.
I've been playing a lot of guitar lately, maybe a little too much. I've got to get back on my banjo.
Listen, you were brave enough to pick on Whiskey Before Breakfast, which to me is like that belongs to Norman Blake after that album.
It's funny you mention that because Norman Blake is one of my heroes. I played several shows with him when I was in the Navy band. One of the most laid back, likable guys you ever want to meet.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened, while I was making this album or coming up with some of the tunes, I was listening to a ton of Norman Blake on my in my car and at home. And I just love his stuff back at home in Sulphur Springs and Fields of November, those albums, and just over and over again. And in fact, one of the albums on one of the songs on Namaste is Warp Factor 8. And
yeah.
Norman has a song on I believe it's Back Home Again in Sulphur Springs. It's called Warp Factor 9.
Okay.
It's just this really mellow kind of jazz.
Yeah, I don't want people to think that's a space song because it's very mellow. Your Warp Factor 8 is a beautiful guitar.
It's really, but I couldn't think of a name of it. And Dave looked at me, and the producer and the engineer, and he goes, what do you want to call this song? And I said, well, what about Warp Factor 8? He said, fine. And he was going to set up the click track for me. He goes, what warp factor would you like this at? Well, about 75. It's based on, you know, a lot of different influences and a lot of different readings I've been doing and stuff like that. I've really been into, like, Eastern philosophy and that type of stuff. I mean, I haven't gone crazy with it or anything, but there really is more out there, you know, man? I mean, it's like, it's music can change everything. It's a very, very powerful thing. I got to open for Pete Seeger one time when I was about 20 years old.
Oh, my.
And the only thing Pete said to me, and he looked at me, and he said, you're the fastest banjo player I've ever heard in my life. And that was all he said to me. Well, I was like 20. I wanted to play everything.
Yeah, man, play everything you can. Fast you
but,
can.
I mean, there was Pete Seeger standing there by a fan. It must have been 100 that day. And he was there, and it was for, this was way, way before the Navy for me. I was in college at the time. And it was for some sort of rally or something. I don't remember what it was, some kind of cause. Something I was with a group called Mountain Laurel back in those days from 80 through 86, and we worked a lot in the DC through Baltimore area. There was a lot of bluegrass around here at that time. Like every other restaurant or bar had bluegrass, you know, that's where the Southern Scene came from, country gentlemen were based around here, and I've gotten to play gigs with Tom Gray and with, you know, Fred Travers. I've known Fred for 34 years.
Wow.
He's gonna kill me for saying that, but yeah, we were both just 10 that night.
Well, I'm glad that I figured out. Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because when I listened to this whole thing several times since you sent it to me, and I knew the title, and I kind of knew what you were going through just from Facebook postings, and I'm just for the listeners, you know, there may be a Warp Factor 8 on there or something else that you think is going to be,
but it's real nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it can make one person pick up a phone and call the doctor and say, look, I'm just not feeling right.
Yeah.
And just go in and talk to your general practice, because they'll put you in the right area. And really, to tell you the truth, Steve, it saved my life. It really did. You know, I went through a really, really bad time the last couple of years, and I came out of that darkness into this light. And now I bounce out of bed every day at 7 o'clock. You know, of course, I really don't have anything to do unless I'm playing a gig.
And you don't have to shave anymore. So what's the rush?
No, I don't have to shave anymore. and it's funny, because every guy I know, and I've known them, you know, over the years, you know, maybe 100 that have retired from the band, and they all grow beards. Everybody does it. Because you can, you know. Yeah, because you can. That's the reason you do it. You know, you have to prove to the world that you have facial hair. Of course, by the time you retire, it's all gray.
Yeah.
I tell everybody, I put the gray highlights in myself. But, you know, maybe the Navy did that. I don't know.
Well, Keith,
thanks so much.
Thanks so much for letting me. I'm going to start the show. This will probably be a two-parter. I'm going to probably break this into two pieces. All right, so we'll air it on two different shows. And I'm going to open the show with Tony Pass, because we talked about that a lot. That'll be at the first hour. And so I want you to tell me what songs, two songs at the end of the portions of this interview that we play in the Unreal Bluegrass Show, that you would like to have following at the end.
Okay.
You tell me. You can tell me now, or you can tell me later.
Yeah, I can. I'd like you to play. One of them would be Kaya's Quilt. Now, Kaya is my niece, and my sister and my brother-in-law, my sister Stephanie and my brother-in-law Jack, adopted a baby from China about 10 years ago, and she's just an amazing, amazing kid. And my wife Deanne and I get to keep her for like 1 week in a month, or maybe every other month or something like that. And she's already a black belt in karate. She has her own horse.
Wow.
And anyway, Deanne, my wife, is a quilter. She's an amazing quilter, in fact. And she was teaching Kaya how to quilt. And so, you know, me being the good uncle that I try to be, I stayed out of the way, and I went and wrote a tune about it called Kaya's Quilt. And I really like it. I wrote it on guitar, and the clawhammer part came later. Let me see, to play that, and maybe, Tony Pass is a good tune to start with.
Yeah, I'm going to start with that.
I would do that, you know, let's see, let's got some clawhammer. Yeah, play the Warp Factor 8.
I had it already circled. I was waiting for you to say it, because I knew it was coming.
Yeah, Warp Factor 8 would be great.
All right.
I think that's a really peaceful song, and, I know I've got a lot of friends out there on Facebook, too, and I won't name them. They know who they are, but some of them are going through some really bad health challenges right now.
Okay.
And some are very severe. And so I'm hoping that this album, you know, I can get it to them, and it can bring just a little bit of peace into their, lives, you know, that type of thing, too. So, but it's good, man. Life is good, you know.
It's all
about music anymore. I mean, that's just what it is, you know. The Navy was great. It was a great job, and I still have dreams about. I can't find parts of my uniform. I'm late for rehearsal. I mean, and everybody. It's our form of PTSD. And everybody in the band that's retired said, "Man, I still have those dreams like 20 years later, or whatever." And I wake up and I'm in a cold sweat, and I'm like, I can't find my hat. I can't find my shoes, you know, my tie is not, you know, everybody's on stage in whites and I'm in blues. I had one of those dreams last night. I was in camouflage, but I was wearing a yellow T-shirt, which is against the rules. And I'm like, why am I wearing a yellow T-shirt? And, you know, the commander was there, and he was looking at me going, why are you wearing a yellow? I said, I have no idea. And I woke up, so I, you know.
Oh man, Keith Arneson, but, man, I've enjoyed your music for so long, and I'm glad
well,
that.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks for giving me the time.
Yeah,
way.
Sure.
I know there's a lot of bluegrassers out there that would like to be interviewed by you, and I appreciate you giving me this time.
Well, yeah, man. Listen, I thought it was. I was looking forward to it. We haven't chatted in real time until those many years ago back in Nashville. But
no, it's been a long time.
We immediately connected on the Stelling. You know what that led to after that? Alan Mundy.
Alan Mundy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, Alan is my hero since 1976 when I first heard
Banjo Sandwich. Yeah, absolutely blew
and
my mind.
I actually got to play that banjo that Alan recorded that album with. And there was a guy named David Field who lived in Midland, Texas, and he had a collection of banjos. He had about $1.5 million worth of Stellings. They were mostly Stellings.
Man.
He had some other high end Gibsons, things like that, but they were mostly Stellings. But he had that banjo, and I think it was probably the second.
I think it was the second one that Jeff made.
Jeff made, yeah, in his garage in California. I think Jeff was still in the Navy, because you know Jeff was a Navy man too.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually got to play that banjo. It was like touching the Holy Grail for me. Because
yeah.
I mean, I've had that album on vinyl. I've had it on
me too.
Track. I've had it, you know, and now I've got it on MP3, and I play it quite a bit, and I am still astounded by his precision. And, you know, the guy does not improvise.
No.
And I asked him about that one time. I said, you know, when you get on stage, it seems like all your solos are you know what you're going to play before your turn comes up. And he said, improvisation never worked for me. He said, everything's got to be worked out note for note. And to me, that's amazing. I mean, I respect that. I really do.
And the sound,
I respect, man.
You know what that album did for me is of course, made me want to go look for a Stelling right away, which I couldn't find where
absolutely.
I live.
Absolutely.
And it
now,
also...
Nobody had a nose.
Nobody did.
Don Rusnak had a Golden Cross. It was Golden Cross. One of the first ones he made for a friend of... It was actually... Jeff made it for a friend of his named Tony Golden.
Mm.
And he had traded a Corvair engine for the banjo. And
that was a good deal.
Yeah, that was a good time. So, no. I had an uncle that had a Corvair.
Not safe at any speed, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, exactly. But Don Rusnak had a Golden Cross in his shop, and I lost it after that thing. And I think at that time he wanted something like $19.95 for it. Now, this was back in 1977. That was a lot of bread.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just way out. I didn't get my first Stelling until I graduated college in 1989, and my father bought me a used Stelling Staghorn, which my banjo I play today. In fact, I just got it back from Mike Munford. He gave it the once over, refretted it, and all that type of stuff.
Cool.
And it sounds spectacular. You know, and Mike's just a great guy.
Yeah.
He's one of my heroes.
He's great.
Banjo players, dude. Yeah.
I tell Alan Mundy, by the way, that when Banjo Sandwich came out, I give Alan credit for my decision to go to law school, because when Banjo Sandwich came out, I was doing pretty good, man. I started in college and Banjo Sandwich came out, and I thought, okay, I'm out. I'm going to do something else, because no human being can make this sound twice.
Yeah, it's all magic, right?
I just decided.
I mean, he was playing tunes. I don't want to get too technical here for our audience, but... you know, he was playing tunes in F, in the key of F, out of open G position.
Yeah.
Now, that to me was magic. When he recorded, when I heard Darcy Farrow. Darcy Farrow on Banjo Sandwich. You know, it was probably 20 years before I realized that song had words. Because the only version I knew was
that
one.
That's right.
And I was like, you mean there's words to that? And beautiful words. So, but no, Alan's a great guy, a great hero of mine. And actually, I did a couple of workshops down there when he was still at South Plains.
Yeah.
When I was in the Navy, whenever we breezed through Texas. So Alan was kind enough to drag his students in and listen to me prattle on for a while. But I thought that was nice.
That was
fun.
But
it really was. But that's why he went to law school. That's funny.
It is. I've told Alan that several times. You're the reason I'm a lawyer today, because Banjo Sandwich came out and I thought, I'm out. I was like the dealer in a casino. Okay, I'm out. Cash me out. I'm done.
You know what? I'm going to mention that to Alan. That's a funny story.
It's true. It's very true.
Maybe I should have been an attorney, too. I don't know.
I don't know about that.
Maybe I'll sell some rutabagas on the side.
Keith Arneson, man, thanks so much for your time and your stories and your dedication
to
music and serving the Navy.
Absolutely.
Man, you've done so much. There's so much more to go, too.
Oh, well, I hope so.
All right, man.
We'll see.
I'll see you around. I'll let you go.
All Okay, Steve.
Thanks, Keith.
All right.